You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Some people think it's stupid. Others think it's funny, the idea of throwing home run balls hit by opposition players back on the field from whence they came. This long-standing protocol began at Wrigley Field in 1970 on a home run hit by Hank Aaron, no less. This begets the question, will a fan actually throw back a home run hit by a Cleveland player in the first World Series in Wrigley Field in 71 years? Our guest is the longtime radio personality in Chicago who was one of the original bleacher bums in left field in Wrigley who started this tradition. We welcome to the podcast the ever-popular Mike Murphy. Mike, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Great to visit with you. And hold on a minute. There's not going to be any Cleveland Indian home runs in Wrigley's field. Are you kidding me?
Right. I forgot. You're Nostradamus. You can predict the future. So, Mike, here's the deal. The story goes that one afternoon, Hank Aaron hit his 521st career home run, which was a significant home run because it tied him with Ted Williams on the all-time list at the time. What happened that day?
Well, as a teenager at the time, I used to hang out there in the left field bleachers. One of the members of what we used to call the left field bleacher bums. Everybody now that goes and sits in the bleachers says, I'm a bleacher bum. Well, we actually were the original bleacher bums. We didn't have many fans out there in 66, 67. I was at a game once. There were five, believe it or not, paid attendance, Wrigley Field, 512.
Wow.
You can look it up. It was a late September game against the New York Mets in 66. I believe the Mets were in ninth place and the Cubs were in 10th. That's before divisions. So you just had 10 teams.
That was the first time the Mets got out of the cellar and they finished ninth in 66.
Right. That's exactly right. But then the Cubs got real good in 67. Fans started coming out. We had a little group up there. They named us. We didn't name ourselves the media. Those are the bleacher bums because we were sort of cantankerous and a little crazy, but good, clean fun, you know.
Sure.
So we had a leader of our group, and his name's Ron Grousel, G-R-O-U-S-L. Chicago kid, born and raised, and he had a little goofy streak in him, which why he was our president of the bleacher bums. So he barehanded and caught that famous home run that you're talking about off the bat of none other than Henry Hank Aaron. So after the game, Ron thought it'd be a nice gesture to deliver the ball in person out to where the Braves walked across to their team bus over at Sheffield and Addison by the L stop, as people know that area. There was no security back then, Ed Randall. Right. There was the players would have to walk about maybe 100, 200 feet out of the ballpark to the bus, which was parked on the street. Since then, of course, over the years, now it's all barricaded up and the players, boom, right in. You know, times change. So our guy, Ron Grousel, was standing by the bus, and Hank Aaron recognized him because Ron Grousel and us, we'd always give Aaron good, clean fun, you know, and yell at him like you do, but no swearing, you know.
Right.
So Ron Grousel comes up, and I guess he says, hey, I got your ball. You want your ball? Well, unbeknownst to us, someone, I guess, during the game, we didn't see it because Tank, I think, was playing right field that day. We're over in left field. I guess threw a beer on him or at him, you know, between innings or whatever. And Hank was very upset with the whole deal. So our guy friendly comes up and says, hey, Hank. And he recognizes our guy because everyone knows the face of Ron Grousel, every player. And he says, sure, Hank, you want to? And I guess Hank, you know, I don't want to say let out with a few expletives because I wasn't standing right there. But Ron said, oh, he gave me a hard time. He said he didn't like the bleacher fans. So I said, well, heck with you. And, you know, kept the ball. Time goes on. The next time the Braves come in, there's another long ball to left field. Hank Aaron again hit it. Ron Grousel, one in a million, did make a clean catch, but the ball's bouncing around. Really reaching down, he's got it. and stared and nudged around Groslin. You know, how cool is, you know, I'd never got a home run ball, never had a ball to take home to play, you know, out in the backyard with. And I look at Ron Groslin, and he says, blank this ball, and blank Hank Aaron. And he takes the ball, and he whips it, and he had a good arm, Ron Groslin. He threw it on the fly past second base.
Wow.
And it was like rolling out in short right field, and the ballpark went silent. What in the world was that? Where'd this ball come from? Who would throw a home run ball back? Well, Ron Groslin would, because he didn't want the enemy home run ball. He didn't care if it was Hank Aaron. He didn't want that ball. So he whips it back, and it started a tradition of the bleacher bums, and any fan out there would catch a home run ball and throw it back. And it's continued on and off, obviously, to this day.
Now, how did this catch on? Groslin does this. The ballpark, you said, falls silent. It's like the ball landed from space or someplace. Nobody's
right.
ever imagined that somebody would be crazy enough to do this. The guy's obviously got a great arm. When did this start to catch on?
Well, that's a great question, Ed. It's sort of what's the new organically. You know, grew on its own. Now, most home runs, you know, are hit by right. There's more right-handed hitters than left-handed hitters, so more home runs obviously fly to left field than to right field. So, and that homestand, you know, maybe the next 10 games, any home run that came out that landed in our group, and, you know, we had about a couple, 300-400 out there, so we had a pretty big group by that time. Any ball out there, you know, it was just automatic. You'd throw it back. However, occasionally it would land in the hands of someone that was not hip to the deal or first time there or out of towner.
An invader.
To, you know, hey, I got a home run ball. This is great. So we would start chanting in unison, throw it back, throw it back, in sort of an intimidating, I must admit, fashion. Like, throw it back, Ralph. So most times they'd whip it back. Sometimes they wouldn't. And we'd take up a collection. We used to be famous for our yellow hard hat construction helmets.
I remember them.
Which we would then pass one around, and people would throw in, and don't laugh, but it was a lot of money back then, 10 cents. Or you could buy a beer for 45 cents, so that'll
right.
give you a perspective, okay?
Yeah.
But you throw a quarter in the butcher bum helmet, that's half of a beer. It's real money back then. And we could collect $5, $10, and we'd bring it over to the person who caught the ball and say, throw the ball back, and this money's yours. And they'd always take the $10 over to the baseball. Pretty soon, the entire ballpark that season in 67 and 68 would start chanting, throw it back. You know, you got 20,000-30,000 people. It's like a funny deal, but, you know, everybody would chant it. So the whole ballpark's echoing, you know, throw it back. And almost every time, the fan would throw it back. So it's sort of like any great cool thing. It sort of grew on its own.
So he, you would bribe him, and then you would think that after the guy threw it back, he's got the money. All right, beer's on me for all you guys. Wouldn't you
well,
think?
He should have. He probably hightailed it out over to right field to keep the money and get away from these crazy bums.
He probably did. Now, with the Cubs bullpen being nearby, there's a story that the relief pitchers on the Cubs would sign a ball, and they would offer to trade it for the one that was thrown back.
Well, yes. The bullpen go out there now, though they're talking about current events, relocating it under the bleachers next year so they can put in two or three more rows of seats, you know, front row seats, and charge goodness knows what for it. But that's done, and now, sure, the bullpen was there. Most of the Cubs ball players were, you know, mid-20s, late-20s, and the bleacher bums, we were teenagers or early 20s, so we were about the same age as a lot of those guys, and they'd come over after the game, many of them, to our bar on the corner behind the center field scoreboard. So we knew them all. Our greatest pal out there was, his name was Dick Selma, S-E-L-M-A.
He pitched for the Mets before he went to the Cubs, and he had a great – he pitched well for the Cubs.
Yes, and he would sort of wave – he'd stand up and wave the towel and get the crowd going. So he was almost like a de facto bleacher bum in a bullpen – other than the fact that he was wearing a uniform number 39 and he was a very good pitcher. But he was usually the guy behind those antics, and yes, it's true.
We're with Mike Murphy, who was one of the original bleacher bums at the time in which they started the tradition of throwing back onto the field balls hit into the stands by opposition players. When did it become a staple, Mike, where everyone was going back? Was it in the 1980s?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Ed. Quick story is the tradition of that was the word died in the mid-late 70s. First, what happened was most of the bleacher bum guys, and we had a few gals, our group, you know, once you get past age 18, 19, 20, 21, you have to get a real job. You get married. Some move away. And the Cubs, frankly, were pretty lousy in the mid-70s. So the park was empty and quiet again, and the bums had gone. So that died off. All of a sudden, and no one can really pinpoint why or how, in the mid-80s, now the Cubs, of course, had the signed team in 84, looked like a World Series visit for the first time since 45, and then the Cubs lost three in a row to the Padres in what we now call the NLCS, you know.
Right.
And so the crowds start coming back, and all of a sudden, I can't answer this yet. I don't know if anybody can, but in the mid-late 80s, all of a sudden, some balls started flying back after home runs, visitors' home runs. And it was sort of an astonishing thing because none of the bleacher bums, quote-unquote, capital B, not lowercase, because all the fans are bleacher bums in their mind now, but someone must have remembered it. So the ball started flying back out haphazardly, hit and miss, and then it became again like the tradition. But I have to admit there's something about the second wave that we don't like, and that is this. Now, the secret, I'll let it out coast to coast, it's often not the home run ball anymore. It's the fans bring a little league ball with them in a bag or their pocket, or maybe they caught a roughed up, you know, batting practice home run ball. But the balls that are jettisoned back on the field now are rarely, if ever, a legitimate home run ball. And I'll let that secret out right now because I don't like it.
This is something that one needs to confess to a priest, don't you think?
or the Billy Goat, but the Billy Goat's gone and all the curses are gone because the Cubs are in the World Series, win or lose. All of the curses we all believe now are gone.
But the idea of throwing back a fake ball, one that either they brought into the ballpark or they may have caught during batting practice, this is an outrageous violation of etiquette in the bleachers.
Yes, it's bogus. It's outrageous. And there should be a criminal penalty, in my opinion.
Without a doubt. This is a felony. And we should also mention that the throwback onto the field has to be a good one, Mike. Otherwise, yeah. I'm sure they give them the business, right?
Well, yeah. I had the fortune to catch a couple home run balls. I caught a Willie Stargell homer in 71 or so. And not to boast, because it was not a tough catch, barehanded. Stargell, a left-handed hitter, usually hit his homers to right, as you would certainly know.
Right.
He hit a pop fly to left field, and the wind's blowing out about 30 miles per hour. And it came down to me like a feather on a parachute. It landed in my hands like a Willie Mays basket catch. Didn't even feel it. Didn't hurt. Now, it was the first time, Ed, that I was going to whip the ball back, right? And guess what? I had played Little League. I had played high school ball. I could throw the ball, okay? I got nervous. I got nervous like I never felt in my life. I put my arm back, ready to throw it. And luckily, I got it out there pretty good. But you have to be careful. You don't want to hit the Cubs fielders. You don't want to hit the Cubs left fielder. You don't want to hit Don Kessinger at shortstop if you really whip it. So you want to whip it a little bit like sort of behind second base out in that no man's land. And it sort of rolls maybe as far as the right field foul line if you really uncork it. But it's a little nerve-wracking when you throw that ball back, just like you said.
Did you ever see a player get hit with his back to the with his back to you guys?
No. However, I will admit this. we used to try to hit the second base ump on a bounce or two, not on the fly. You know, not trying to hurt him. But in those days, old baseball fans might remember in the National League, the second base umpire did not stand where he has for the last 30 years in by the infield. He used to stand out behind second base in the shallow center field.
Right, yes, he
and
did.
They had done that for 100 years, National League umpires, until they moved him in maybe in the 90s or sometime. Mm-hmm. But if you really did it right, you could like 2-3 hops and hit you know, Shaq Crawford, you know, and his fanny on his second box, and everybody got a good laugh out of that, including the Cubs bullpen.
And ideally, the bleacher bums want the antagonist, the player who has hit the home run, to see the ball returned. I would think there have been times where the ball lands in the stands and the guy just fires it right there.
Right.
Right.
In other words, we don't want your stinking home run.
Right.
Get that dirty baseball out of your back to somebody else's. We don't want it.
Right. Ideally, it should be shown. It should be shown to the hitter. And I would think through these years, there have been occasions where that's happened.
Well, we had a few outfielders over the years that weren't too happy with the bleacher bums because we would find out, you know, private things about their lives from usually the Cubs players. The Cubs would say, I remember there was a fine outfielder with the old Los Angeles Dodgers named Willie Davis, and he was their center fielder. Well, one of the Cubs, that might have been Dick Selma, one of the guys told us, hey, he's got there's a name we want you to yell. The woman's name was Ruthie. We don't know why. We never asked, but there was something about Ruthie that Willie Davis didn't want known. So, of course, whenever Willie Davis were not to center field, Dodgers, we'd yell, Ruthie, Ruthie, and he would get upset. And he would give us the look, Ruthie. We don't know who Ruthie was, but we can guess or something we weren't supposed to know. Well, one day, Willie Davis, after we're giving him the business, you know, no swearing, giving him the business, he hits a line drive home run. Now, he was a lefty.
Yes.
He goes oppo, and he drills a hard-hit home run right into the midst of us as if he's trying to damage one of us. In other words, you know what I mean? Incoming, boom! So he's rounding first base, he's rounding second base, and he looks at us, and he decides to give us the one-fingered salute,
oh,
if you know what
no,
I mean.
No, no, half a peace sign. No.
Looking out at us where he had just drilled a home run, probably hoping he'd rearranged someone's front of bridge work.
Right.
And he let us know with his gesture around the bases. I often wondered what would happen if Jack Brickhouse, we could get the old tape, the Cub announcer. Well, yeah. It was Willie Davis rounding second with the close-up on the home run, following him. And he seems to be motioning for the left fielder, Billy Williams, to play deeper next time. No, that's not what he was doing, Mr. Brickhouse.
No, he wasn't arranging the defense.
No, he wasn't motioning play deeper. He was motioning something else to the bum.
Yes, distress. There is also a story about one fan, Mike, waited for Manny Ramirez to take his position in the outfield and then threw back his ball.
Well, I never heard that one, but I'll give that fella A for creativity. I like that one.
And it is spread to other parks, including Yankee Stadium. And last season, you may have heard this. I was at the game, actually. Brett Gardner, playing left field for the Yankees, got hit by the returning throw.
Yeah, well, that's a Bush League move. Hopefully it was just someone with a rag arm, a bad arm, as we used to say, and not intentional. So it's probably just someone that got all excited, wanted to participate, and maybe got, like I almost did, the tight collar, and maybe the ball just came out wrong. So let's hope it wasn't intentional.
And now there are announcements in other parks that fans throwing a ball back face ejection. You must think this is a horrible rule.
Well, you know what? I sort of like it to just be Wrigley Field, to be honest with you. So maybe it should be banned at 29 other ballparks so it can remain unique to Wrigley Field. How's that?
That's good. But you guys were beloved. You developed relationships with your players, especially your left fielders. None more so than Gary Matthews, who everybody called Sarge. He was incredibly popular when the Cubs went to the NLCS in 1984 against San Diego, and he bought you guys Army caps.
Yes. In 1984, as you say, Gary Matthews, who had been a star, of course, with the Giants and I want to say the Phillies, when Dallas Green came over to retool the Cubs, not unlike Theo Epstein has done in the current day. Dallas Green had led the Phillies as the GM and field manager at one point to multiple World Series, I believe it was. So Dallas Green is hired by the Tribune Company, who owned the Chicago Cubs back then. And, of course, not surprising, all GMs seem to do this. One of the first things he did was start trading with his old team because he knew, you know, everything about the Phillies. And he got Bobby Dernier, he got Keith Moreland, he got some pitchers, and he made a great trade to get Boa and Sandberg for a journeyman shortstop named Ivan De Jesus. But his one of his great trades was getting the Sarge, Gary Matthews, as you said. And Matthews was more than a terrific ball player. He was a locker room leader and a fun guy. And he brought the nickname Sarge, the Sarge, with him. So, you know, everyone, all the Cub fans, Sarge, Sarge. And he would always salute. He'd run out to his position, and the game would be starting, and he'd salute the fans, and they'd salute him back, you know, and it's pretty cool. And one day, he popped for, they were like baseball caps, but they had stripes on his, like, sergeant stripes on the side, and they were, like, khaki, if I remember, or they were white with khaki. So he distributed, I think it was about 3,000 one day. You know, he probably had the PR guy buy the lot of 3,000 and the passed them out. I believe later they might have started selling them at Wrigley Field, but the first time, you're exactly right. So it was quite a sight to see the all the left field, the whole bleacher, I think left field he bought them for, with their Sarge Matthews sort of army hats on, right.
Do you still have yours?
No, I don't think I have that. I still have my bleacher bum helmet. We wear those when we go on road trips to protect us from flying objects from the St. Louis Cardinals fans when we go to the old Busch Stadium. But I do not have my Sarge Matthews hat.
last thing before you go. The etiquette in the bleachers, I understand, Mike, dictates that you never, ever start the wave out there. I'm wondering if somebody, some knucklehead, did that. And did you beat him to a pulp, or was he charged with a crime? What happened to that guy?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, and I don't go to 81 games, but as a radio talk show host, I try to watch 81 Sox games and 81 Cubs games if I can't get out there, of course. But I don't recall, if I'm wrong, I apologize. I've never seen the wave at Wrigley Field. Now, there might have been an occasion where someone tried to start it, some out-of-towner, and everyone else would have just said, we don't do the wave at Wrigley Field. So if it started once, I guarantee you, it never did the 360 all the way around ever.
No, not. And it only happened one time ever in Wrigley Field. Before you go, tell us about the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Your thoughts about this team that's been put together by Theo Epstein.
Well, it's a very interesting team. Last night's game was not a real surprise to, I don't think, any baseball fan or Cub fan. You know, they ran into, you know, Corey Kluber, one of the best pitchers in the game, and he was on fire. He was pinpoint. He was filthy. He was locked down, and, you know, the better team won yesterday. But the team itself, as you say, that Theo constructed, has very few weaknesses. I think that's what really has propelled them to the best, most victories in baseball this year. They're solid, very solid starting four. They actually have a solid starting five. And it's interesting that when you get to the World Series or the postseason, you only start sometimes three or at the most four starters. So it does sort of hurt teams that are built for the long haul, but that's the way it is. The bullpen is pretty darn well constructed also, though Carlos Rondon had a few rough outings and he was not sharp again in mop-up time last night. The Cubs led the league in National League in runs scored, I believe, batting average on base. But here's the key. The Cubs led all, and this is from John DeJuan's Fielding Bible, the stat of the week guy. John DeJuan, he's based here in Chicago, so we refer to him often, but I think he's quite well known nationally. He started up Stats Inc. 25 years ago. And his Fielding Bible during the year pointed out at the end of the year the Cubs were the best fielding team in all of baseball, which goes under the radar, Ed. Runs saved, defensive runs saved is
right.
The category, and the Cubs saved more runs than anybody else. So they're terrific defensively, offensively, starting pitching, and relief pitching. So, you know, they have no weakness, true weakness, which I think every team aspires for. You can have some strengths, but you got two or three spots where you're weak, and that can fall apart quick. So I think this series will go seven games. Obviously, I hope the Cubs win, but right now I think it's going to be a very entertaining dogfight. I think I read today that the ratings were one of the highest for a World Series game in a number of years. So the country's enjoying it too, it looks like.
And we may live to see a Chicago Cubs championship.
Well, it'd be great. You know, we've gone through a lot as Cubs fans, a lot of down times and a lot of heartbreak when things looked like it was going to be the year. Me, as a lifelong Cubs fan, went to my first game in 1958 for a frame of reference. I'm so happy and relieved to be – now, this might sound bad to some people – I'm so happy and satiated, Ed, that, you know, they're in the World Series, that it's not going to be life or death to me if the Indians beat them. Of course, I'd love to see them win, but it's just such a relief after all these years to just be in it. So I think Cubs fans are very happy, and some, of course, you know, will be heartbroken if they don't win the World Series. Maybe I will be, too, at the end of the six, seven games, but it's just so wonderful for lifelong Cub fans that have been around for so many years like me.
Mike, a joy to have you. Thank you so much for the memories, and thank you so much for that great arm of yours.
Well, I didn't injure anybody, so I was okay. Thanks, Ed, anytime.
All the best. So that'll do it for Mike Murphy and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.